Are you offering your clients the experience they really want, or are you offering them what they think they want? Join host Laura Gregg and David Partain from Northern Trust Asset Management as they talk with a variety of industry experts and advisors, just like you, about their latest industry research to help you develop the flexible mindset you need to rise above the crowd.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the Flexible Advisor Podcast, where we dig into a broad range of conversations that we hope will help our advisor listeners grow their businesses by deepening client relationships. I'm very disappointed that my co-host, David Partain, the funny man in this show, is unable to join us today, but I know he'll be back on another episode soon. So when I met today's guests, I was impressed by all of the things that she could share with us. So much so that I decided that there was no way we could cover everything in one episode. So this is the first two-part series we've ever done, and we will be talking with Nikay Anani, who is Director of Next Generation for Northern Trust Wealth Management. And today we'll be talking about families, family businesses, rising generations within families, and what advisors should be thinking about to deepen trust with family members so that you can retain and grow assets, right? We'll be talking about multi-generational tactics. In our second conversation with Nikay, we'll be talking about a growing number of trust structures that are available to meet the very unique needs of the families that you serve and their wealth transfer strategies. Now, Nikay has worked in her father's business. She spent 10 years creating and managing a family office. She is an author, a podcaster, a consultant, and now she develops strategies for Northern Trust to make an impact in helping families engage and develop their rising generations. Nikay, I'm so delighted to have you today. Thank you for joining us on the Flexible Advisor Podcast.
Thank you so much, Laura, for having me.
So I'm delighted again to have you on the show and for you to share your story, which is such a unique one. As we talk about families today, I think a great place to start would be to hear about your family and how the dynamics of your family helped you create the path that you are on today.
Yeah, so I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria, and my father was an entrepreneur from when I was a baby, frankly, and my mom was a lecturer. So I was raised in an enterprising family. I don't really remember much about the business in the early days. I just remember that my dad's office was down the road from where we lived, and I would spend a lot of time playing there with him after school. And then when I turned 9, my parents made a decision to relocate us to the UK in search of a better life. So that was myself, my brothers, and my mum. We moved, and Dad stayed back in Nigeria to continue to build out the business. And so I spent, you know, I went to high school in the UK. I went to university there. I started off my career in tax planning at Deloitte. But honestly, I was uninspired. And I remember having a conversation with my dad about my career. It was fun. I love my colleagues. I love the culture. It's just the work itself was just not... It just didn't light me up. And I remember he invited me to come to Lagos for a few months to shadow him. A few months turned into a decade. I ended up, as you said in the introduction, I ended up setting up and running our family office. And I was deeply inspired by all that was entrusted to me and the responsibility. And it was really meaningful for me being frontline and contributing towards my family's legacy. But it came with its challenges as a rising gen, not only on the technical side, you know, very steep learning curve. I was 24 when I first moved back to Lagos and I started all this work. But also on the relational side, feeling eclipsed by my dad's success, navigating family dynamics, working with family for the very first time. It's not the same as working in Deloitte, I tell you that. And feeling torn between, how am I going to make my own mark and forge my own path? But also, how do I honor everything that dad's built and contribute towards his legacy? And that was the birth of like this passion that, to help other rising gens navigate similar challenges. And that's what I've been doing over the last 5 years. I help rising gens in transition prepare for their ownership and leadership roles, both one-on-one and in peer groups.
That is so interesting, and clearly nobody shares your unique story, but I'm guessing so much of what you just told us, the challenges that you had, the feelings of responsibility and legacy, are things that are relatable to the clients that you serve at Northern Trust. And I'm curious about how you came to Northern Trust. Where did we find you? And have you been able to kind of carve out something unique that is aligned with your passion?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I was in Nigeria for a decade. 3 years ago, I started a new chapter in my life where myself, my husband, and our two young boys, we moved to the US. So I stepped down as CEO of my family office and focused on my Rising Gen consultancy. And during that time was I was engrossed with my podcast for Rising Gens, which was called The Connected Generation. And I also authored a book called Lifetime to Legacy. So I was on the speaking circuit and spoke at PPI, Purposeful Planning Institute's annual conference Rendezvous, which is where I met Amy Sostak, Director of Family Education and Governance here at Northern Trust. And we just had a really great conversation about the synergy between the work that I do and the opportunities and the complexities that we were facing within Northern Trust. And it just seemed like a really good organic fit. And through a series of conversations with the wider Northern Trust Institute team and larger wealth management team, a role was created to serve Rising Gen clients. Like I said, in one-on-one settings and in peer groups. And that's what I focus on today. I've created a platform for Rising Gens to engage in, to plug into communities, and also creating bespoke workshops for them to help them in this transition, whether it's ownership transition, leadership transition, to give them practical insights, to empower them to make decisions and to form their own goals.
That is, I imagine, so important. I want to kind of step back because you keep using a term that I've heard before, but I don't hear it regularly. But rising gen, what I'm used to hearing is next gen. Is there any difference between the two? Are they interchangeable? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think there is a difference. To me, rising implies self-determination, empowerment, and limitless potential. There's no ceiling, so to speak. I mean, we're all next, right? Next is just chronological, but rising is a choice. It's psychological. Next is like you're waiting in line, but rising is a choice to ascend towards greatness. And for me, and for many rising gens like myself, autonomy isn't just like it's at the heart of our identities. Like I mentioned earlier, I felt like I was in the shadow of a giant, and that was really intimidating. And it made me question my worth, and I lacked confidence. The irony is that many of us that are born into these enterprising families often find we may feel imprisoned, right? Despite all the seeming abundance of resources and the opportunities, to be able to forge your own path is really, really hard, especially when you're burdened by expectations of a family or responsibilities that these enterprises impose on you, but yet at the same time, you're trying to make your own mark. And so being seen as Nike, as opposed to XYZ's daughter, is really important to me. It's empowering. And I realize the power of choice, the importance of finding my own voice and going after my own vision. And this is the heart of why I went into my coaching business and coaching rising gens. And I really want to share that perspective here within Northern Trust because our mission is to cultivate an environment where the rising gen thrive, where we create a space where they can see that possibility, where they feel confident, where they really trust us. You know, when we invest in them and we acknowledge their aspirations and give them the tools to go after whatever they want to do, they'll be grateful. And so for me, it's really about making them feel seen, valued, and empowered to rise. So when I speak about rising, I also speak about not just the psychology, I also think it's about a stage of life. So folks that are age 25 plus, once you've had a little bit of life in you, then you can start to reflect as to what it is like, how you want to rise, see what I mean? So our platform, when I'm speaking about our Rising Gen initiatives, is curated for folks aged 25 to 45. There's some flexibility around that, but you know, people in that stage of life, building families, building their careers, building businesses, and trying to be the best that they can be.
So, as you're working with these people, Nikkei, are you also engaging with their families, the matriarch or the patriarch, or is it just them?
Well, so I'm working in community groups with just the Rising Gen. But I'm also brought into conversations to share my perspective as a rising gen to the older gen, because quite often they have many questions when they're going through the planning process. There's a lot of fear around, you know, how the wealth can kill the drive of the next generation. You know, are they giving too much to the next generation? When should they start talking about these things? And just sharing my perspectives, having been on the other side, often helps for them to think about how it the implications, what that would mean for their rising gen. So I'm often, you know, brought into conversations in that way. I do a lot of speaking, I do workshops, but when I work one-on-one or peer groups, it's solely for the rising gen.
And how are you tapping these rising gen folks? Are they currently Northern Trust clients? Are they prospects? Is it a little bit of both?
Yes, about 80% are current clients, so children or grandchildren of existing clients, and the balance are prospects, whether children or grandchildren of prospects or prospects in their own right. And I often say that rising gens is not a homogenous kind of persona, so to speak. So you've got people that are leaders, so they play an active role in a family enterprise like I did. You've got folks that are owners, they're just inheritors. They, whether it's owners of a business or of liquid assets through trust or outright, but folks that are creators. These are young entrepreneurs or young executives, young philanthropists in their own right. But often they're navigating, you know, complex issues of wealth in transition. Like I shared my story, the challenge of the responsibility of your identity and even navigating generational differences and attitudes towards wealth. And, you know, it can be quite overwhelming because you don't learn any of this, like investments, estate planning, and wealth management at school. And so through our platform, we're able to empower them with the tools to be able to make their own decisions and really make their own mark and define their own paths. And we do that through community. We found that community is the preferred mode of learning for the emerging generation. They don't necessarily want this lecture style, traditional way of learning. They want to be in a safe space where they can hear from Laura, what are you doing? What's working for you? What's not working for you? And they want to openly exchange ideas and perspectives and challenges and gain insights. So, yeah, we place folks in intimate circles of like 8 to 10 members where they meet on a quarterly basis And they set the agenda. They tell us what it is they want to discuss, what they want to learn about. And it's gotten really great engagement.
So really, it all comes down to communication. It seems like that's core, you know, how best to communicate within families and within peer groups. David and I have done some behavioral work on how advisors can grow wallet share with their clients. And, you know, that all comes down to building trust, but building trust is always contingent on understanding where the clients and prospects are and how best to communicate in a way that they're willing to accept it. And I'm wondering, you know, as you put on your hat and think about what you're doing at Northern Trust, do you have any communication ideas or best practices for advisors as they begin to engage with the rising generation of their existing client base?
Great question. One I would say is to understand and not feed the fear. There's a lot of fear in wealthy families around the potential negative impact of the wealth, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves. You see it with a lot of rising gen. I've had folks say to me, all of this is going to go away by the next generation, isn't it? We're the generation that's going to destroy this, right? And as advisors, it's important that we recognize and we empathize with the fears, but we don't feed them. And we shift the dialogue from fear to possibility, like asking positive framed questions, you know, that encourage them to see a positive future for themselves and their families. And getting them to consider how wealth can be a tool for growth and opportunity for themselves and their families. And one question I love to ask is, you know, if you could wave a magic wand and create the future you want to see, what would it look like? And just follow up with why questions, and you just keep you unveil so much, and you get to their values, you get to their vision, and it really does build a lot of trust. So being able to shift from fear to possibility is one. Second thing I would say is, I think we're in a really privileged situation to Sherpa and help our clients navigate. Money is a huge deal. It's for a lot of us, money is still very taboo, right? Very few people open up to their advisors, and you know, they don't open up to other like advisors in their lives in the way they will typically open up to their financial services providers, right? And I think we can show them that we have a roadmap for their preparation, and showing them, you know, how they can consider their development in an age-appropriate way, or their skills to be built up in a cumulative way, is helpful. So we have like a roadmap for financial education that I find as a helpful visual, because this can feel kind of nebulous. It can feel very overwhelming, but showing them that, hey, I can Sherpa you down this mountain is really helpful. And then if we are in situations where we're with families or with the wealth creators, just I would say encourage them to the best that we can to openly communicate with their children and remind them that no matter how young, they have their own views and aspirations, right? They want to be spoken with, not at. And encourage clients to do like a values exercise with their children to understand their perspective, what's important to them. That can serve as a really effective way for them to share their point of view.
About family meetings and using those sorts of situations to kind of identify where there are commonalities in terms of values and where there is, you know, a disconnect. And do you do any work on that family meeting side?
Oh yeah, values is usually where we start. Is we first understand individual family members' values, and then we try and find common ground. And we don't need a huge amount of common ground. We just need a little bit, right? And values really align, so we'll be able to show the family like, hey, we all stand for empathy, or we all stand for community, and let's explore what does that mean to Laura and what does that mean to Nikkei. Because sometimes the interpretation of values can differ, and actually it may be the interpretation that may lead to clashes as opposed to our fundamental views for like what is important to us, right? So yeah, family meetings are always a great way to encourage alignment within the family and openly communicate. But I would say it has to be well timed. Sometimes an ill-timed family meeting can create more drama than than not having a family meeting. So you have to be discerning as well. There's a lot of dynamics that we're not necessarily privy to see if and when we interact with our clients just on a quarterly basis.
So, as a preview, I don't want to talk about this now, but for our listeners, these are all inputs that we'll be talking about in our next episode and how these inputs can really impart what a wealth transfer plan or structure might look like. So, just a little bit of what's to come, and we hope you'll join us for the next episode because there really is a lot of interesting trust structures that can be utilized to incorporate values and a lot of other things. So please stay tuned for the next episode. But now back to this episode. I recall reading an article, Nikkei, in which you were featured, and you talked about how important it is to be aware that each generation has a distinct set of lived experiences that makes them who they are. And, you know, my husband and I are reminded of that quite frequently as we have conversations with our 20-something adult children. And usually it's in the construct of Bob and I saying, gosh, we look at each other and say, they just don't get it. But really, that shouldn't be a surprise because as we frame everything and what we would have done when we were 23 or how we would have attacked that or how we would have communicated, it doesn't even... It's laughable because everything is so different. You know, we didn't have texting capabilities. We didn't have social media. Everything's different. Yet we want to keep assigning behaviors on our children today that we had, you know, 30 some years ago. And I'm guessing in the case of a family business that this disconnect can introduce even more challenges when multiple generations are working together. And so I'd love it if you would maybe provide some comments and some tips for our listeners that might help them better coach the families they're serving.
Some tools that I love to use with families is to get them to, just like what you're saying, different generations have different perspectives, preferences and priorities. I love empathy maps, right? It's a map that have eyes. What are they seeing? Ears, what are they hearing? Skin, what are they feeling? Heart, what are they sensing? Right. And essentially, so if I were to do an empathy map for Laura, I would try to imagine I'm in her shoes and what's going on with her. Like, what's top of mind for her? Like, from even if it's on the business perspective, like, for her, maybe her three main priorities: stop the bleed, grow aggressively, improve productivity, perhaps, right? But for a rising gen, it could be overhaul the technology, pursue a sustainable agenda, and professionalize the staff, right? Quite often what happens is families are not talking to each other, they're talking over each other because they don't understand the perspectives and the priorities and preferences of each other. Once we're able to understand that, like, it really helps with then choosing how, when to communicate, right? But in order to understand and to be able to develop an empathy map, it takes a lot of patience and listening and observing and sometimes asking questions, right? That's one thing. Then two, I would encourage families to then, based off that empathy map, tailor your communication in a way that resonates with the counterparty, right? I love the book, The Five Love Languages. It's so intuitive, right? Because the author is basically saying we all have this dominant native language that we like to express and receive love. But like, say, for instance, I am words of affirmation. My husband is acts of service, right? So he will go and wake up in the morning and make me coffee and do all these wonderful things, and I'm just looking like he hates me, right? He obviously hates me, and I'm waiting for him to say, "Oh, you changed your hair, love it," or "You got some new shoes, love it," or "I love the way you did X, Y, Z," that's the way I like to express and receive love. But when other people have a different language, it's like I'm speaking Arabic and he only understands French, right? And it's the same thing here. So once families are able to understand, hey, it seems like Laura's preferences, perspectives, and priorities are X, Y, and Z, then I can tailor my ideas to communicate with them in a way that they will actually hear and understand.
Great advice. And you pretty much pegged me, just by the way, and what my business priorities are. So kudos to you. Again, another preview, right? In our next discussion, we'll be talking about wealth transfer and the emerging ways to handle it. But it's a preview. Aside from growing the business, what are things that you wish family business owners would start thinking about and acting upon earlier rather than later?
I think we're in a really interesting time and moment given the great wealth transfer. And I think family business owners have an opportunity to pivot and to embrace. We're really in a new paradigm. There's a lot of emerging trends with the rising gen. They will have tremendous amounts of resources. 40% of the total wealth transferred is going to millennials alone. And for them, top of mind is social change, social impact, philanthropy, and they're eager to do this actively. They want to take risks. They want to do this leveraging tech. They want to work collaboratively, and they want to use different types of capital to make an impact. And we often hear from the older gen that, my children just don't want to engage. They don't want to like get involved with me and like my philanthropy or like my business. Well, maybe this is the opportunity to lean in to them, seeing as they are so passionate about it, but don't be afraid of their ideas and of change, right? There's an opportunity here to learn from their perspectives, to collaborate, to impart the wisdom and experiences, but give them the space to try new things. And it may result in uniting as a family and developing a shared vision of impact.
So you have accomplished just a little bit in your life already, public accountant, partnering with your entrepreneurial father, creating, running the family office, hosting a podcast, running a consulting business, and now as an executive at Northern Trust. I'm wondering, like, through all of these very different experiences, I would say, what has been one of the most important things that you've learned?
Yeah, it can all feel like a lot because I wear many hats even till today. But I've learned to live a life by intentionality. So if I say something matters to me, it should reflect in my calendar. And I try to be organized about this. So I sit on the board of our family office. I'm involved in community. I've got my day job, at Northern Trust. And sometimes there are times where everything is demanding me at the same time. And this actually happened a couple of weeks ago. But this is where I find it really important to have boundaries around my non-negotiables. And for me, that's my self-care, my exercise, my reflection time. Boundaries are there to protect me and reinforce the positive that I want to see in my life. And I know that I show up best when I care for myself. I also find it really helpful in seasons of like, where it's just, it feels kind of overwhelming to communicate effectively with family, with friends, coworkers. Like, hey, for the next 2 weeks, this is pulling on my time and this is my priority. And I found rarely does this cause an issue or a conflict. Actually, people are usually very grateful that you've given them a heads up. And they will often like, how can I help you? How can I support you? How can I assist you? So honestly, one of the most important things that I've learned is to focus on like me, learning to know me, and that I'm not a machine and I have to protect my well-being, that's when I show up the best.
I think, the transparency and really communication, right? It all comes
Yeah.
back to how we communicate and how that helps us build our relationships. It was so wonderful to speak with you today, and I am thrilled about our next episode together, where we'll focus on wealth transfer strategies and how to make that meaningful for all generations. And in the meantime, if you'd like to learn more about Nikkei and the work she's doing at Northern Trust, check out the links in the show notes. And if you'd like to see Nikkei in person and hear her speak, there is an event on Thursday, April 25th, 2024. It's the Northern Trust 2024 Wealth Planning Symposium. And Nikkei will be sharing her expertise along with many other wealth industry thought leaders. This is a one-day event. It's tailored to the needs of advisors to ultra-high net worth clients, specifically those advisors who are working with multi-generational wealth families, family offices, business owners, and C-suite executives. So if you want to learn more, if this is an educational event that you think you might be able to benefit from, you can find the registration link in the show notes. Nikkei, is there anything more you can tell our listeners about this event and why they might want to consider it?
Yeah, we mentioned earlier in our conversation around like we're in a new paradigm and there's a lot of change that's happening in our world. The theme of the symposium this year is Rethink Tomorrow. Like, how do we explore these changing trends? How does it impact our practices as advisors from AI? As an advisor, what do you do with it? How do you actually implement it? There's a session on purpose trusts, looking at the increasing trend of business owners like Patagonia, for instance, selling to a purpose trust rather than to a PE firm. We'll also be exploring taxes and flexible planning in an election year, something that's top of mind for a lot of our clients and advisors, particularly with the upcoming expiring gift tax exemption in 2025. The session that I'm participating in is titled From Inheritance to Impact: Navigating a New Era of Wealth Stewardship, really around how rising gens are increasingly interested in making an impact on society rather than just inheriting and accumulating resources within families. And I'll be joined by Marguerite Griffin, our Philanthropy Advisory Services Director at Northern Trust, and also Chelsea Toller. She is a phenomenal leading rising gen philanthropist from the Austin community, and she will share her inside perspective and story.
Fantastic. And then just for clarity, this is open to advisors outside of Northern Trust. And we, if this is of interest, please check out that registration link. Thank you again, Nikkei. Can't wait for our next session, which is coming up very soon. And thanks to everybody for listening to The Flexible Advisor. We've created the show in hopes that it will help advisors share best practices and grow your business. And if you like this podcast, consider subscribing and leaving us a five-star rating. And most importantly, share this podcast with other advisors. For myself and David Partain, we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us on today's episode of The Flexible Advisor.
Thank you for listening to the Flexible Advisor podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Northern Trust Asset Management. The information contained herein is intended for use with current or prospective clients of Northern Trust Investments, Inc., NTI, or its affiliates. The information is not intended for distribution or use by any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Northern Trust Asset Management, NTAM, and its affiliates may have positions in and may affect transactions in the market, contracts and related investments different than described in this information. This information is obtained from sources believed to be reliable. Its accuracy and completeness are not guaranteed and is subject to change. Information does not constitute a recommendation of any investment strategy, is not intended as investment advice, and does not take into account all the circumstances of each investor. Northern Trust Asset Management is composed of Northern Trust Investments, Inc., Northern Trust Global Investments Limited, Northern Trust Fund Managers, Ireland Limited, Northern Trust Global Investments, Japan, KK, NT Global Advisors, Inc., 50 South Capital Advisors, LLC, Northern Trust Asset Management Australia, Pty Limited, and investment personnel of the Northern Trust Company of Hong Kong, Limited, and the Northern Trust Company.